Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. I hope you all had a great weekend out there. Today we open our show with some national news stories from Public News Service, including intelligence findings linking Russian President Vladimir Putin to hacking of the American presidential election and Donald Trump's response, the latest on that Florida airport shooting, plus a farewell from President Obama. Then on our Capitol Report, hear why protests are mounting across the nation to Donald Trump's nomination of Senator Jeffrey Sessions as U.S. Attorney General. Plus, hear about a bill by San Diego Congressman Daryl Issa to make it easier for Congress to undo actions by outgoing President Obama. On Green Scene, we'll tell you how a local hospital has gone completely off the electrical grid and reduced its monthly energy bill to zero. Then learn about some openings on several volunteer commissions in the city of El Cajon. We'll also tell you about a special meeting coming up Wednesday for the Helix Water Board to fill a vacancy left by an unexpected resignation, and how the board is responding to ratepayers' requests to move meetings to after work hours. The federal government has issued some new guidelines for parents that aim to prevent peanut allergies in children, and we'll have details on today's show, courtesy of Public News Service. Next up, learn why a running program is helping local youths on probation get a positive path forward. On the second half of our show today, we'll be re-airing our interview with Mark Jorgensen. He's the former superintendent of the Yanza Borrego Desert State Park, and he'll be speaking about his fascinating book titled Bighorn Sheep, Wilderness Icons. We'll have all of these stories and more, so please stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Welcome to the Public News Service. I'm Veronica Carter. Here's what's happening this weekend. The investigation continues into that mass shooting in a Florida airport. President-elect Donald Trump still not saying whether he will accept intelligence reports about Russian spying and several protests across the country this weekend. In the news, officials now say the man who shot and killed five people and wounded eight at a Fort Lauderdale airport once walked into an Alaska FBI office and said the government was controlling his mind and making him watch Islamic State videos. Police said the gun was in the man's checked luggage in the baggage area. Relatives say he had a history of mental difficulties. President-elect Donald Trump won't say whether he accepts the conclusions of intelligence officials that Russian President Vladimir Putin ordered state-sponsored meddling in the 2016 election. Trump said after a classified briefing that he did learn a lot. President Obama returning to his political hometown of Chicago on Tuesday to deliver his farewell speech to the nation. In this week's presidential address, he takes a look back and discusses how America has changed since he took office.
Remember that America is a story told over a longer time horizon, in fits and starts, punctuated at times by hardship, but ultimately written by generations of citizens who've somehow worked together without fanfare to form a more perfect union.
The community of Whitefish and Montana leaders are sounding alarms about a possible armed march by white supremacists in the coming weeks, and two local groups are responding with an event of their own. Love Lives Here and the Montana Human Rights Network are co-sponsoring the Love, Not Hate party this weekend to help fight weeks of harassment of the town's Jewish residents by users of a neo-Nazi website.
Rachel Carol Rivas with the Montana Human Rights Network says these issues are nothing new to members of Montana's Jewish community.
It just feels different because we're all kind of really have a heightened awareness about the microphone some of these bigot ideas have been given by the candidacy of Donald Trump, and that concerns folks.
The harassment has been denounced by state leaders, including the governor, Montana's entire congressional delegation, and the mayor of Whitefish. The Love Not Hate party will be held at Depot Park at 10:30 a.m. and includes speakers and musicians such as Blackfoot Nation singer and storyteller Jack Gladstone.
That's Eric Tegetoff reporting. Progressive groups are gathering in Las Vegas and Reno over the weekend to rally the faithful before state legislators convene and ahead of the inauguration of President-elect Donald Trump.
The third annual Progressive Summit takes place Saturday and Sunday in Las Vegas at the College of Southern Nevada, Charleston. Courtney Kravitz with the group Battleborn Progress helped organize the event, which is open to the public.
It brings together a lot of progressive community members to learn about the different issues that we have going on in the community and how to be ready to go for the legislative session.
She says quite a few state lawmakers will attend, including the new Speaker of the Assembly, Jason Frierson. They'll discuss upcoming legislation on issues that include voting rights, immigration, women's rights, equal pay, student loan debt, and gun violence prevention. I'm Suzanne Potter.
Also this weekend, protest at a Dairy Queen in Zion, Illinois. The restaurant's owner, Jim Crichton, is accused of calling an African-American customer and her daughter by racial slurs on Wednesday. Daya Ford says he insulted her with the slurs in front of her children after she requested a refund for an incomplete order. Ford said it was difficult to explain the incident to her daughter.
I said, you know, there's not nice people in this world. You know, not everybody has a good heart. And, you know, she understands. She's like, he's a mean man.
Dairy Queen issued a statement saying the company is in the process of revoking Crichton's franchise. U.S. Justice Department has submitted a statement of interest in a lawsuit seeking to end the solitary confinement of juveniles in a New York jail.
The lawsuit, filed by the New York Civil Liberties Union and Legal Services of Central New York, challenges the ongoing practice at the Onondaga County Justice Center in Syracuse of holding 16 and 17-year-olds in isolation. NYCLU staff attorney Phil DeGrange says the statement of interest cites numerous court rulings that have found the solitary confinement of juveniles for short periods of time to be unconstitutional.
The federal government also looked at the bevy of Supreme Court cases that have found juveniles to be constitutionally different than adults, and also noted that juveniles are much more susceptible to psychological damage as a result of being in solitary than adults.
Last month, the NYCLU requested that the court issue an expedited order which, if granted, would require the jail to remove children from solitary confinement. I'm Andrea Sears reporting.
There was a massive amount of consumer spending over the holidays this year, but it's more likely that online shopping is the source of the uptick. Online sales on Black Friday were up 22% over last year's sales, topping a record $3.3 billion. What will the trend toward more online sales and an expectation of faster delivery times due to American cities? That's where the newly created Urban Freight Lab at the University of Washington steps in. Lab's director, Barbara Ivanov, says cities still manage loading zones with an old technology, a stripe of yellow paint.
And a lot of times when you look around, all the inventory at the curb sitting empty and could be used more efficiently, more effectively if we actually had applied more technology to the way that piece of space, that piece of real estate operates.
Over the next 3 years, the Urban Freight Lab is collaborating with Seattle's Department of Transportation, which contributed $285,000 in the lab for its research. They're also partnering with companies such as FedEx, Costco, and Nordstrom, as well as the U.S. Postal Service. You're up to date. I'm Veronica Carter for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. Opposition is growing to Donald Trump's nomination of Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions as Attorney General. Last week, over 1,100 law professors from across the nation sent a letter urging the Senate to reject Sessions' nomination. In addition, NAACP members in Alabama have been arrested after launching a sit-in at Senator Sessions' office in Mobile, Alabama, to protest stances on racial equality, civil rights, and voting rights issues by Sessions, who formerly served as U.S. Attorney in Mobile. The letter to senators is signed by law professors from 170 law schools in 48 states. It will also run as a full-page newspaper ad directed at members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, which has confirmations hearings scheduled on January 10th and 11th. The law professors contend that Sessions will not fairly enforce our nation's laws and promote justice and equality in the United States. Their letter highlights the fact that he was rejected for a nomination to a federal judgeship over 30 years ago over questionable prosecution of civil rights activists for voting fraud, as well as a joking statement praising the Ku Klux Klan. Others object to his statements opposing legislation to protect rights of women, immigrants, gay, lesbian, and transgender individuals. Sessions has called the NAACP, which stands for National Association for Advancement of Colored People, un-American. Hezekiah Johnson with the Birmingham, Alabama NAACP said at the protest outside Sessions' office that the organization's main concern is centered around, quote, the reality of voter suppression. Johnson believes Sessions is biased and will not be impartial on issues of civil rights, voting rights, and equal protection for all. But Sessions' former chief counsel, William Smith, who is African-American, defends Sessions and calls criticisms a smear campaign, the Washington Post reports. Sessions once prosecuted a member of the Ku Klux Klan, securing a conviction for murder, his supporters point out. He also has support from Gerald Reynolds, a past chair of the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights. But that's not enough to satisfy National NAACP President Cornell Williams Brooks, who issued a statement which concludes, "As a matter of conscience and conviction, we can neither be mute nor mumble our opposition to Senator Jefferson Beauregard Sessions becoming Attorney General of the United States. Senator Sessions has callously ignored the reality of voter suppression, but zealously prosecuted innocent civil rights leaders on trumped-up charges of voter fraud," he concludes. Brooks says Sessions can't be trusted to be the chief enforcement officer of voting rights, adding he's been a threat to desegregation and the Voting Rights Act and remains a threat to all of our civil rights. The NAACP protesters earlier said they would not stop their occupation of Sessions' office until his nomination is withdrawn or until they are arrested. But last Tuesday night, video posted on the NAACP Facebook page showed police arresting peaceful protesters at the sit-in, an image reminiscent of arrests made of peaceful protesters during the long fight for civil rights and voting rights, constitutional protections that these Americans believe are worth standing up for and sitting down for once again. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
San Diego Republican Congressman Daryl Issa has introduced the Midnight Rules Relief Act, or House Resolution 21. If approved, it would make it easier for Congress to undo regulations issued in the final weeks of President Barack Obama's administration. The measure would allow Congress to terminate multiple presidential regulations with a single vote. Issa contends that such actions by Obama and other outgoing presidents should be curtailed. In a press release, Congressman Issa states, "Regulations impacting the economy, the environment, families, and our community should be done with great caution and transparency, not get rushed in last minute on a president's way out of office. The bill is expected to be approved by the House this week in advance to the Senate. If approved by both houses of Congress, it's unclear whether incoming President Trump would sign the measure. However, since doing so would not only undo Obama's parting efforts to secure his legacy, but would also restrict Trump's future ability to make lasting late-term presidential actions of his own." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ Radio, this is Rebecca Williamson.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
Sharp Grossmont Hospital and the Grossmont Healthcare District celebrated the completion of the hospital's new central energy plant in December. The facility now supplies the hospital with its own generated energy, taking Sharp Grossmont Hospital completely off the electrical grid. The three-story, on-site plant will save millions of dollars in energy costs and is expected to reduce the hospital's emissions of greenhouse gas pollutants by 90%. Funding for the project came from the taxpayer-approved Proposition G, a 2006 ballot measure, and philanthropic support. The plant also houses a new $18 million cogeneration system paid for by Sharp Grossmont Hospital. In the event of a major outage or other emergency, the hospital will be able to continue caring for its patients and operating as needed by producing its own power. The facility is named the Brady Family Cogen in honor of a major donation from East County residents Ron and Mary Alice Brady. Elected officials recently visited the hospital and flipped a symbolic switch to celebrate the hospital going off-grid to become energy self-sufficient. Supervisor Diane Jacobs says the new central energy plant is emitting less than half the allowable emissions, which makes it one of the five least polluting plants recently built in California. The cogeneration system uses a combustion turbine generator, similar in function to a spinning engine on a passenger jetliner. Powered by natural gas, it has the capacity to produce up to 4.4 megawatts of electricity. Though this is more power than the hospital currently needs, the new facility was designed to allow for future growth and expansion, including construction of a new heart and vascular center. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
The El Cajon City Council is seeking people to serve on its Planning Commission, Veterans Commission, and Personnel Commission. In addition, there are three vacancies open on the Public Safety Facility Financing Oversight Committee. Applications are being accepted now through January 12th. All applicants will be interviewed and appointed on January 24th during a 7 p.m. City Council meeting at Council Chambers. You can pick up an application in the City Clerk's office and on the City website at the City Commission's page, or call the City Clerk's office at 619-441-1763 with any questions. Reporting for East County Magazine at KNSJ Radio, this is Rebecca Williamson.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The Helix Water Board will hold a special meeting on Wednesday, January 18th, to determine how it will fill a vacancy left by the resignation of Lou Tejeda. The board will also vote on whether to move its public meetings to evenings in order to encourage more public participation. Tejeda, who was elected in November, cited conflicts of interest due to his new job with a contractor as the reason for his resignation. At a meeting last week, the new board majority pushed to appoint Dan McMillan, whom Tejeda narrowly edged out by just 185 votes. Both ran on a platform of lower rates or reducing future rate hikes, and both defeated a longtime incumbent. Supporters of the appointment note that McMillan has experience previously serving on the Padre Dam Municipal Water District Board, and that choosing anybody else would disenfranchise many voters. But Director Deanna Verbecki dissented, calling for the district to accept applications and conduct interviews with all interested parties in an open meeting before making an appointment. The final process will be determined at Wednesday's meeting. As for changing those meeting times from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m., over 30 ratepayers so far have testified, called, or sent emails, all favoring the change to accommodate ratepayers who work 9-to-5 jobs. Lemon Grove Councilmember Jennifer Mendoza also spoke in support, noting that most members of city councils in East County also have day jobs and have difficulty attending Helix Water Board meetings in the afternoons. All four of the current Helix Water Board members indicated that they now favor changing meeting times to evening hours, even though that was tried years ago and did not increase turnout. But Larry Nichols, president of the Grossmont Mount Helix Improvement Association, which has fought against the rate hikes, pointed out in his testimony that times have changed since then due to heightened awareness among ratepayers after the former board approved a 5-year rate hike. If meetings are moved to the evening hours, Nichols predicts, people will show up and speak out. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The number of kids allergic to peanuts in the U.S. has risen dramatically in recent decades, and new guidelines may help reduce a child's risk of developing a peanut allergy. Dr. Amal Assad with the Allergy Center at Cincinnati Children's helped write the recommendations released by the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. She says in the past, it was recommended to delay giving a child foods containing peanuts during their first few years of life. But newer research shows there are benefits to earlier introduction.
If we try and beat the onset of peanut allergy by feeding an infant peanuts, peanut butter, or peanut protein early on, we may even be able to prevent the peanut allergy from occurring.
She says the key is knowing a child's risk for developing a peanut allergy. Children at highest risk have eczema and or an egg allergy, and the guidelines suggest they be exposed as early as 4 to 6 months of age. It's also recommended that infants with mild to moderate eczema who are already eating solid foods should be exposed at 6 months of age. The same age babies who don't exhibit any risk factors can also try foods that contain peanuts. Assad notes that prior to introduction, it's crucial to have a child at high risk for peanut allergies be seen by their doctor or an allergist who can test for a peanut sensitivity. That's where parents also can get the proper instructions for how to go about giving the child foods containing peanuts. She adds there are some kids who develop peanut allergies without any risk factors.
That's why the first feeding of peanut-containing food need to be under close supervision, because there's some random kids would just get peanut allergy for no real reason that we know of.
A peanut allergy can cause hives, rashes, breathing difficulties, and a severe reaction can even be fatal. For Public News Service, I'm Mary Sherman.
A running program is giving some youth in detention not only a physical outlet for stress, but also meditative time to refocus and readjust attitudes that landed them in trouble, the County of San Diego reports. It's turned into both a goal and an accomplishment they never thought they could attain, and an important component of their efforts to get their lives on the right track. Recently, 7 young people in the custody of county probation competed in the Silver Strand Half Marathon, all with times under 2 hours and 30 minutes. They trained by running laps around East Mesa Juvenile Detention Facility and under supervision in the foothills near Camp Barrett in Alpine. The fastest of the group was Kenny, a 17-year-old who finished 3rd in his age division, or 59th overall out of 1,550 total race participants. Kenny, now free on probation, had been detained 3 times for offenses including fighting and theft. He was even shot during one run-in. He thinks running and a youth boxing program can steer him away from his old ways. Kenny readily admits that he likes the praise that comes from being good at running, a sport he'd never tried before this program. At Camp Barrett, the young people apply to be in the program by writing an essay, and they can remain in the running program by maintaining good behavior. Dr. Carlos Nelson, a senior clinical psychologist from the county's Health and Human Services Agency, assigned to the camp, said running can bring about huge changes in youth like Kenny. Exercise helps with mood problems, anxiety, and self-esteem. Dr. Nelson says all of them have a desire to connect with something really positive. He adds, some of them are so depressed or traumatized or live in environments that are so impoverished that they lost their hope and desire to thrive. Exercise and experience with success reignites their hope and desire to do well in life. Kenny says after a few weeks of training, I felt healthier and my self-esteem was high. He was often the class clown, doing anything for a laugh, even if it meant getting in trouble. But that changed when he didn't want to chance being kicked out of the Camp Barrett Running Club. He says that when he's running, he keeps positive thoughts in mind, like you can do it. I was motivating myself, says Kenny. Pain is temporary, but achievement is permanent. At East Mesa Juvenile Detention Facility in Otay Mesa, Correctional Deputy Probation Officer R. Martinez tried for years to establish a running program, but many thought it could be a security risk. Eventually, the program developed in 2011, and security has not been a problem. Martinez said he was also troubled as a teenager, and he credits sports with helping him move in a different direction. He felt strongly that youth could be helped by doing physical activity. Staff from Probation, Health and Human Services, and the County Office of Education have supported the youth by running alongside them and donating running shoes. Companies have also been generous with shoe donations or waiving entry fees at events. Martinez and staff teach youth about running techniques, injury prevention, diet, types of running shoes, and training. They run up to an hour every day and sometimes longer. Martinez says, what these guys get from running is it calms them down. At least while they're in here, it helps them out so much. He hopes it's a coping skill they'll use after they are released and beyond. But running is not going to be a life changer in itself, Martinez said. The teenagers have to be ready for a complete course correction. When he began the program at East Mesa, Martinez had 6 runners. Now there are 17. Other standouts in the Silver Strand Half Marathon were DeMarco, who finished 4th in his age division, and Hector, who finished 9th in his age division. Both are now home on probation. DeMarco was on his last chance at East Mesa due to getting into repeated fights. He had signed a contract that stated if he continued getting in trouble, he would be sent to the state's youth detention facility. After he got involved in the program, he became respectful, responsible, and an example to other youths in his unit, said Supervising Probation Officer Brian Day. DeMarco said he still had a gangbanger mentality when he entered into probation custody, but after 2 years, he's, quote, matured a lot and is ready to move on with his life. While in custody, his mother died, and he has since been adopted by his neighbors. His adoptive father is also a runner and ran alongside him at the Silver Strand race. Hector had been in and out of juvenile detention for years. When he first arrived at East Mesa, he was depressed about his predicament and being separated from his family. After he began running, he noticed it was changing his mindset. It gave him hope, even though he struggled at first. Hector says that running gave me goals, more motivation, and determination. He's proud of his accomplishments at East Mesa, finishing both high school and the half marathon. In the future, Hector hopes to strengthen ties with his family and become a student at Grossmont College so that one day he can be an at-risk youth counselor to help other kids by sharing his story.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, people-powered radio, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County. Today, my very special guest is Mark Jorgensen. Mark was the longtime supervisor of the Anza-Borrego Desert State Park. He is a biologist, and he is now the author of a book on bighorn sheep called Desert Bighorn, Wilderness Icons. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me today.
So tell us a little bit about your background studying bighorn sheep through the years and how you got interested in this particular topic.
I started actually in my teens and visited Anza-Borrego very often. I grew up in above El Cajon in Fletcher Hills. Took every opportunity I could to get out to the desert where I found a lot of freedom. Mm-hmm. And bighorn sheep just really grabbed my mind, and I was totally intrigued by an animal that could survive in such a harsh landscape.
Yeah, they are amazing, the way they can just scramble up a steep, rocky face and survive on so very little water in such a forbidding environment out there. And they're beautiful, beautiful creatures. So how many of these desert bighorn sheep do we have left today, and are they endangered?
In San Diego County now, we're at a very high level, probably higher than we've had in 40 or 50 years, we think.
Really?
Probably over 600 in mm-hmm. San Diego County. And the population that we study is called the Peninsular Bighorn in the Peninsular Mountains from Palm Springs to the Mexican border. Yeah. And we feel there are probably about 1,000 bighorn in that group now.
Okay, and does that include, there are also some of these in northern Mexico, correct?
Correct. Baja California has quite a few distinct populations. One population now that we think is derived from a core population in Carrizo Gorge has now repopulated the area around Interstate 8 and Mountain Springs Grade, and we've documented through radio telemetry those animals crossing the border into northern Baja.
Very good news. So in the entire world, which basically the southwestern areas here and northern Mexico, how many peninsular bighorn are there on the planet?
Well, desert bighorn, which peninsular are a subspecies of, we estimate now there are about 31,000.
Mm-hmm.
And we feel that that's probably the highest population we've had throughout the Southwest and northern Mexico in probably 75 or 80 years.
That's very good news. Now, how many of those are the peninsular subspecies that we have here in San Diego's East County, out in Borrego and so forth?
About 1,000 within the United States, and then probably another 1,000 of that group in Mexico.
Yeah, so there's only 2,000 of them. So even though the population has increased, would you say this is still something that we should be very concerned about, making sure we don't take missteps that could imperil these animals?
Exactly. We have an increasing population in 7 U.S. states and 6 states within Mexico. These animals, desert bighorn, were extinct in the state of Texas. They were extinct in 3 states in northern Mexico. Now, through a lot of very diligent efforts, they've been brought back.
Nice.
They've been transplanted. But we can never be really too cautious. We have to understand what caused them to go extinct in some of those areas in the first place and make sure those things don't happen again.
Right. So what are the biggest threats to the bighorn sheep locally here in San Diego and Imperial counties, as well as northern Mexico?
The biggest threat we have overall in the Southwest has been diseases derived from domestic livestock.
Ah.
We don't have a lot of that in our local desert areas, although we do still have signs that we have some pneumonia problems that take out young animals especially. And we're seeing certain canyon areas, certain subpopulations that are really having trouble rearing their young through that first summer.
Is there anything that can be done to protect them from that?
We have been trying to work with interagency groups and with ranchers, livestock operators, to make sure that we have no domestic sheep and no domestic goats anywhere within bighorn sheep habitat.
Yeah.
Now, one issue about our animals crossing the border now into northern Baja is the lack of controls in Baja with livestock operators. So these animals that spend much of their time in California could cross the border, make contact with domestic sheep or goats, and turn around and bring those disease agents back to their herd mates back in California, and really those things can spread very rapidly.
Right. Now, the border issue is kind of a double-edged sword, though, isn't it? Because on the one hand, they can get exposed to diseases down there. But on the other hand, they have historically crossed the border back and forth seasonally for water sources, maybe food sources. And how is the border wall? We hear a lot of talk these days, Donald Trump and others, about let's just wall off the entire border. A good portion of it already is here in San Diego County. How is that impacting the bighorn sheep here?
So far, we have held off the triple fence and the high walls within bighorn habitat in San Diego and Imperial County. We need to really monitor that situation. When you look at the entire border, Arizona, New Mexico, California, you have to be concerned about many large mammals that have been crossing that border for hundreds of thousands of years. Jaguar, pronghorn, and bighorn. And
can they get through or over the wall that we have out there in East County? It's not real big, or is it just a matter of only after it ends out there somewhere around Jacumba?
Correct. The fence currently ends at Jacumba Airport, just east of the small town of Jacumba. And then there is no fence through the rugged bighorn sheep terrain all the way to the desert floor.
Yeah, very rugged mountain areas, rocky mountains out there.
So we would like to see that status maintained where there is a large gap through the most rugged terrain. There are some human trafficking issues there, but it's not a main thoroughfare. It's not very welcoming to human foot traffic. Certainly vehicles can't make it through there at all.
Yeah.
The idea that some government officials just want a gigantic wall and without any consideration to hundreds of thousands of years of wildlife corridors.
So do very many people really manage to get through that very, very rugged section? I mean, if they were to have their way, these officials, and wall that section off, obviously would have a huge negative impact on the sheep. Is it really doing much good in terms of, you know, keeping undocumented immigrants or whoever they're worried about from coming across the border there, or is the terrain so rugged that it's pretty well accomplishing that on its own?
In my opinion, it's not worth it. They have double and triple fencing down along the Tijuana border from the ocean inland to Otay, and people still manage to climb that and go through it and under it.
Yeah, tunnels.
And now there's discussion about the Carrizo Railway being reopened.
Mm-hmm.
And so certainly you're going to have a causeway of movement of people and drugs through there.
Yeah. What about the drought that we've had for the last 5 years, which certainly is easing somewhat now, but how much of an impact has that had on the desert bighorn population, Mark?
All forms of wildlife are going to depend on good winter rains and good spring green-up mm-hmm. for the forage, whether you're talking about insects or reptiles or small birds. Certainly bighorn depend directly on spring vegetation green-up. And even though people thought this was an El Nino year, 2015 and 16, we still registered a little over half our average in Borrego Springs and in the desert region. So the drought is still in full swing. In order to have young survive, the females are going to have plentiful green up and nutrition in order to produce milk. And we have, you know, a significant number of lambs being born. Probably 80 to 90% of the females do give birth.
That's good.
But then we have very high mortality mm-hmm. rates in late spring, early summer.
Is that because of lack of water here, or disease, or other factors that we'll be getting into in a moment?
Yeah, it's very complex, so it's multiple factors. We can't just pin a very complex problem down to one or two simple solutions,
yeah.
But we do know that it works in combination.
Do predators take very many of the lambs? Mountain lions, eagles, anything else? Coyotes?
Mountain lions are the primary predator of bighorn sheep in our area. In the 1990s and early 2000s, we documented fairly common predation by mountain lions on bighorn sheep.
Mm-hmm. Which are protected now from hunting and shooting. So,
right. And, you know, you'll have two sides of that controversy as well. People mm-hmm. that think mountain lions are in trouble and cannot be taken, and other people who think that if you took a great number of mountain lions, it would allow bighorn sheep to just spring back magically. Doesn't really work that way. We've seen high predation levels mm-hmm. suppressing bighorn sheep. And then when environmental factors reverse and we start getting more rain, more green up, we saw the sheep population rebound and the mountain lion predation backed off quite a bit.
For centuries, the local desert bighorn sheep have had to contend with primarily natural cycles of drought and rainfall and predation and so forth. And then later, the introduction of domestic sheep into their territory. But in recent years, we've also seen an influx of development of various types, everything from golf courses to, you know, resorts. And most recently, these massive-scale green energy projects, the desert wind projects, industrial-scale wind projects and solar projects. What kind of impact are those projects having on the desert bighorn, and in your opinion, does that threaten their potential for survival over the long term?
It is a great potential threat, and it's a real threat in the big developments that have already been constructed. Many times these things are sited out in the desert, and I think society feels that put them out in the desert, they're out of sight, out of mind. And with government support, unfortunately, they've been put into some very valuable wildlife corridors.
So, yeah, I remember that you told us at one point about a report that the Anza Borrego Desert Park folks were trying to prepare that would be voicing concerns about the Ocotillo Wind Project when it was proposed, when there were hearings going on that the federal government was holding on that, and that wound up being suppressed. Did that report include concerns about the impact on the bighorn sheep of this wind project, which shared a 5-mile, or does share, it's been built now, a 5-mile border with the Anza Borrego Desert State Park?
Correct. And, you know, we've had state and federal government support of these mega industrial projects, whether solar panels or wind generation. And we have provided testimony at many of these meetings prior to construction, pleading with these organizations to consider wildlife concerns. And unfortunately, the government in large part has swept our concerns under the carpet. And in the case of the wind generator plant, when asked their opinions, the park folks unfortunately had to say they didn't have opinion. The government, state government, had told them to basically put a muzzle on it. Wow. And they didn't want state employees who really knew the situation on the ground countering what Governor Brown had approved.
Yeah, and the federal government, I think, shares some blame here, too. I know that they inexplicably delisted that entire project site and said it was no longer critical bighorn sheep habitat, even though everybody out there said, you see bighorn all the time. It took our photographer exactly one day, when I asked him to go document bighorn sheep on the project site. He documented, I believe it was 11 of them, 11 or 12, standing there on the site. There was GPS on the photo, ear tags, tracking tags on these animals. Absolutely no question what they were, where they were, when this was taken. And when we sent this to the Secretary of the Interior, Salazar, his response was to order the issuance of take permits, allowing the wind developer to inadvertently kill up to 11 or 12 sheep, however many were actually shown in our photograph, rather than doing anything at all to protect them. And then after the project was approved and built, you know, despite all this evidence, people out there told us they quit seeing the sheep for a long time, and then when they dropped the big blade off and had to shut it down for 3 months, the sheep came back for a while and then left again when the project was powered back up. So it just seems like there's a lot of evidence, if they just open their eyes and look at it, to see that it's impacting, at the very least, the migratory ability of the sheep to move through this area, whether the actual noise or infrasound, you know, may also be impacting them, who knows.
And one of the towers was allowed, as you said, under a take permit to be placed right in a bighorn lambing area where we knew six bighorn females traditionally came to the same spot that they felt was safe.
Wow.
And so there was a take permit provided for six females and six lambs. And this is just not how our society should operate. When we are armed with good scientific information, we should step back a little bit. I mean, they started that project with over 200 wind turbines, and they ended up with 117.
Yeah.
So to go to 115 or 112 or whatever to accommodate bighorn lambing would have been really no net change for that operation.
Yeah, which is worth noting. It has underproduced ever since it was built. It has yet to ever meet its capacity factor that was promised all 3 years. It's come in substantially.
So what these projects do is you cut off bighorn movement here, you cut it off over there, and what that does is it fragments the bighorn habitat, where in prehistoric times we had free movement of animals from one mountain range across an open valley to another mountain range all the way into Baja. Now we have fragmented this into islands of habitat.
Yeah.
And we have Interstate 8, Interstate 10, wind farms. When these projects are allowed to be built within bighorn habitat, whether it's a border fence or a canal or a wind generator plant, one after another, whether it's a border fence or a highway or a canal or a golf course right up against, you know, into a canyon, these things preclude bighorn free movement, which they've had for hundreds of thousands of years. And it creates islands of habitat instead of an open, what we call a metapopulation, where animals can move in response to drought, disease, large-scale fires. Mm-hmm. They have a lot more resilience in a large swath of habitat.
Yeah, and I would think the islands could also contribute to inbreeding over time. I mean, you need a healthy population that's large enough to keep a healthy gene pool, right?
It could. We have studied that, and we found out that since rams do move long distances, as far as 75 or 100 miles, it doesn't take too many incursions by a ram to do away with that inbreeding concern. But in the long term, you've created these small islands of habitat, and they become much more vulnerable to whatever natural or human-caused catastrophe might beset that habitat.
Now, I've heard some talk about creating special wildlife overpasses on freeways. That's been done in some other countries. Tell us about that and whether that is something that could be helpful to our local bighorn population.
It definitely could, and we've been studying it for about 20 years, and it's about time that we took action on that. Interstate 8 is a prime example. We have animals crossing four lanes of traffic almost daily.
Wow, yeah, I've had readers send us photos of that pretty regularly.
And we've had quite a few animals get killed, and we know that it's happening. We have a water source adjacent to the highway, and as this population has expanded, which has been a good thing, the numbers have increased in that southern population from a group of about 30 back in the 70s and 80s to over 200 now. So that's all a good thing, but that means that you have to provide this historic habitat, you know, in a high-quality fashion.
Yeah.
And I-8 was widened in 1963. During construction, there were bighorns seen every day, and for about 30 or 40 years, they were absent from there.
Wow.
Now they're back. They're getting hit by vehicles. There's probably, you know, many tens of thousands of vehicles a day.
So what would it take to get one of these wildlife bridges built?
The state of Arizona built three over on Highway 93 between Kingman, Arizona and Hoover Dam. They've been extremely successful. In the first 20 months of operation, they documented more than 2,000 crossings by bighorn sheep. So these things are, it's a matter of government action. And so these wildlife overpasses, really, the science is out on them. We don't need to study it anymore. We need to find out where to build them, and we need government funding. We need the initiative. We need some action to allow these bighorn free movement between these islands of habitat without being struck and killed. It'll also benefit public safety because a 220-pound ram coming through your windshield is a threat to human safety. And so in Arizona, they've completely eliminated motor vehicle accidents with bighorn. We've had thousands of sheep crossings documented with cameras. Very successful.
Wonderful program. Well, let's hope they can get that going here. Couple of more questions. What are some of the most interesting facts about bighorn that you would like to share with our listeners that you have learned in the course of your many years of research, as well as your wonderful book about the desert bighorn?
Yeah, we put the book together, Desert Bighorn Sheep Wilderness Icon, Jeff Young being the photographer.
And it's beautiful photography, by the way. I highly recommend this book. It's published by Sunbelt Publishing right here in East County, and the photography is just stunning.
We had that difficult challenge of selecting from more than 60,000 photos that Jeff Young had taken, and we put 200 of them in this coffee table book. Our big goal there was to help educate the general public. I think people are fascinated to know that desert bighorn sheep still thrive in San Diego County, right here where we all live in our backcountry, and they're thriving throughout the Southwest and into Mexico. But our goal was to help people learn more about this valuable wildlife species. And when we hear about potential threats or developments out in the desert, my goal is to develop a higher level of awareness and education among the citizens of San Diego County. So when they hear about a development going in, they can express their concern. And I think once you look at the book and read it, go out and see bighorn, I feel we all have an obligation to sound the alarms when we hear that something threatens this valuable wildlife species.
So what can people do specifically? Are there particular actions that you recommend the public take if they are concerned about preserving our local bighorn sheep?
I think when they hear about projects, whether it's more solar, whether it's Sunrise Power Link expanding, we hear about golf courses around Palm Springs, La Quinta, that are being notified they have to build fences to exclude bighorn. Border fence, anytime you hear that, the reentry of the Carrizo Railroad into Carrizo Gorge, Bighorn will die. There hadn't been a train there in 34 years, and they actually used the tunnels for shade.
Oh, my goodness.
And while the train was operational, I went in and recovered two Bighorn that had been hit by the trains. Mm. We know it's going to cause mortalities. So I would just ask the general public to call their legislators, county board of supervisors, and especially if you hear about another large-scale energy project out in the desert, to voice your concerns, come to public meetings, support groups that are doing the right thing, land acquisition, research projects. And we have the Anza Borrego Foundation that supports acquisition of bighorn habitat in right. Eastern County.
It's also a good idea, isn't it, to reach out to state and federal representatives, your members of Congress, your members of the state legislature, because so many of those decisions about the desert lands are out of the hands of the local supervisors. The railway, maybe they have a say-so over, but not if it's on, say, Bureau of Land Management land or some of these other places that have been impacted by the big projects.
I saw a piece on the local news, TV, about the railroad the other day, and I've been following it. I've written stories about it. I've researched it. It is not a moneymaker. It's almost impossible to keep it operational mm-hmm. because of fires, earthquakes, floods, natural disasters, the economy. And all I heard is this is going to be great for international trade between the U.S. and Mexico,
yeah.
and it's going to be a jobs creator. I didn't hear one word about the environment. You know, I'm not going to go out and make a big deal out of it. It's a dedicated railroad, and just let the chips fall where they will. But I predict it won't last 5 years, and it's not a good thing for the desert wilderness or for bighorn sheep. And I think that someone, when they come up with these big ideas, they should consider the environment once in a while.
Yeah, definitely. Just because it sounds green doesn't necessarily mean that it is, with the case of some of these big solar and wind projects and transportation and elsewhere. Now, the public can participate in the annual Desert Bighorn Sheep Count each year. It's in July. It's not for the faint at heart, but tell us about that.
We have been conducting an annual 4th of July Bighorn Sheep Count in Anza Borrego since 1971. And we generally solicit volunteers, mm-hmm. between 60 and 70 of them. And the difficult part for volunteers is they are assigned to a water source that is visited by bighorn sheep, at least we hope is. And they sit there for 3 full days in the shade, a couple hundred yards back from the water.
Yeah, and we might be talking shade when it's
quite
115 degrees out there.
Some days they're lucky and it's only 103 or 105. Other days it's 118. So it is not for the faint of heart. And we have a mandatory orientation program.
Mm-hmm. So people want to get involved despite the hardships. You do get spectacular photos if you're a photographer out there. How do they sign up?
They can get ready for the summer of 2017 by sending their name, address, and their email and phone number out to Anza Borrego Desert State Park in Borrego Springs. Attention, Ranger Steve Beer, and he will put those potential volunteers on a mailing list. And next spring, he will notify them all when the count and the mandatory orientation program would be. And they can get involved. We've had people, one individual's been on 44 out of the 45 we've had. Many people have been on 20 or 30 of them in a row.
My goodness. Is there a fascinating fact or two about bighorn sheep you'd like to share with our listeners before we wrap this interview up?
You know, through the use of technology, we have gained a lot of knowledge in the last 20 years. And today we have not only radio telemetry collars, but we've moved on to GPS collars and actually satellite collars that send info directly to a computer. So we've been shocked to see if some of the long-range movements, especially among the rams.
Hmm.
We had one ram that we put a radio collar on down in Carrizo Gorge below the railroad, and he went missing. We searched for him with radio receivers, and we were astounded to find him 75 miles away in the Santa Rosa Mountains.
Wow.
All the way at the north end of the park, He'd gone through about five different mountain ranges, crossed about three or four paved highways.
He really got around.
And during the mating season, they go on these walkabouts in search of females.
Fascinating.
It drove home the idea that we need to keep these mountain ranges connected.
Yeah. What can you tell us about the relationships between our local Native American tribes and the bighorn sheep through the years?
We know through interviews with tribal elders and with a lot of the traditions that are carried on today that the desert bighorn played a very large role in the everyday life of both the Kumeyaay and the Kuya, who were native to San Diego County. We also have found several sites where bighorn were hunted by Native Americans. We find series of rock hunting blinds. So we know they were an important food source. They were also very important, you know, in the spiritual life of Native Americans.
Use the horns and everything.
Yeah. So, you know, and they continue to be valuable to not only the Native American groups, but to people in our society today. We have a lot of folks who gain strength just knowing that wild bighorn are out in the wilderness.
Yeah.
And also folks that want to go out. I just met a guy this morning. Had breakfast with him, and he was going out to photograph bighorn again.
Yeah, they're very inspiring. It's such a thrill to see one in the wild.
So we put the name Wilderness Icon in our book because these things truly are a symbol of wild places. They live in pure wilderness and in wild lands, and we would like to be able to nurture those wild habitats throughout America and Mexico.
Well, Mark, it has been such a pleasure having you here. Listeners, if you just tuned in, we've been speaking with Mark Jorgensen, who is the former supervisor of the Anza Borrego Desert State Park, a biologist, and the author of a wonderful new book called Desert Bighorn Wilderness Icon. You can get that through Sunbelt Publishing right here in East County. Mark, thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you, and thank you for everything you do to preserve our environment here in San Diego County.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Rebecca Williamson with a Crime Beat report. The California Highway Patrol is asking for help to identify a hit-and-run driver who struck and killed a pedestrian at 1:30 a.m. New Year's morning on eastbound State Route 94, just east of Kenwood Drive in Spring Valley. There is no description of the hit-and-run vehicle. The man who was fatally struck down had been driving a gray Nissan Sentra, but pulled over into the center divide after arguing with a passenger. He got out of the vehicle and began running in the fast lane of traffic. He was struck by a vehicle that failed to stop, continuing east on Highway 94. The victim died at the scene due to his injuries. Failing to stop at the scene of an accident is a crime. If you have any information on the hit-and-run driver or vehicle, please call Officer Kevin Perlstein at 619-401-2000.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.